Oh, gee, it's been a while since I've heard that music on this particular program at 8:30 on a Wednesday. Welcome to Focus on Health, brought to you by Van Deese Medical Center, where now more than ever, their focus is you. I'm being joined by someone I haven't seen for quite a while, because normally we do the show, if I can speak right, at Van Deese Medical Center. Lori Foster, good morning to you.
Good morning to you too, Pat. And it is nice to be back in the studio this morning.
Yes, because you do the programs at the hospital each week.
Yes, for many of our listeners, they may not realize that, but for the last couple months, we have been recording the show at the hospital. We have some equipment there, and it has made it much easier and more convenient for our guests to step away, record the program. We've provided the file to the radio station, and it's worked out very well. But it's, like I said, it's really nice to be back and live in the studio with you again to do the program.
Glad to have you along. We have also some very good friends here this morning talking all about the big drug take-back day, which is coming up this Saturday here in Webster City at Hy-Vee, and also about opioid stewardship.
That is correct.
But before we go any further with our guest there, Lori, as always, you have some very important information to share with our listeners, don't you?
I do. Thank you, Pat. I have a few announcements I would like to make. One in particular that was made last week, hopefully I can provide a little more clarification on. On April 19th, last week, Mercy One announced an agreement with Trinity Health to become the single parent of Mercy One. Mercy One has operated under two parent organizations, Trinity Health and Common Spirit Health, since 1998. And many people don't realize that. However, this announcement will allow for continued growth and unity with the Mercy One Health System based in Iowa. Also, for further clarification, the parent organization, Trinity Health, does not have any affiliation with Trinity Regional Medical Center in Fort Dodge, Iowa.
Because that's with another organization, right?
That is correct, yes. Mm-hmm. And this transition will have a positive impact. It will allow for a fully connected, a more integrated health system to care for more people. We are a county hospital. We remain Hamilton County Public Hospital, doing business as Van Deese Medical Center. And there are no changes to our affiliation agreement or relationship with Mercy One as part of this announcement. So I do want to stress, Mercy One's name and logo will remain. And I know that was probably the most common question that we received. So really, this announcement is above really any affiliation agreements. Trinity Health is acquiring the actual other 50%, if you will. As I said, Mercy One was owned by Common Spirit Health and Trinity Health. Trinity Health will now be the sole parent owner and for Mercy One. So this will become effective July 1st of 2022, this year. And again, this does not change our affiliation agreement with Mercy One. We have a management affiliation agreement, and we are not an owned facility of Mercy One.
I think the big thing, Lori, is that people, certainly they won't know the difference.
Right.
It'll all be the same thing day in, day out at Van Deese Medical Center, but a little bit different away with our merger that happened, this announced last week. And it's, I believe, taking effect December, I think.
The acquisition, July 1st.
Acquisition, yeah.
July 1st, that is correct. So I wanted just to provide some additional information there. Also, as we look to begin construction on our infusion center renovation project in the very near future, I'm excited to share an update about our campaign. To date, we have received a total of nearly $93,000 in donations, which does include the foundation's gift that initiated the Give With Your Heart campaign. And we will continue to solicit donations through the completion of the project. We also have an employee goal of raising $10,000, and we are very close. So as soon as we hit our goal, I will be sharing that, and we'll be excited for our listeners and just all of our patients and customers to hear that. It's a terrific project to support and get behind. I do want to mention that donations in any amount are appreciated and can be made online. That's really the easiest way to do it. If you go to our website at vandeestmc.org, right on the homepage, you can donate now, or you can make a donation by cash, check, or credit card. And I hope to provide some more information on timeline. We actually have a meeting today when I get back to the hospital and hope to have more information in upcoming programs about that.
Wonderful.
Also, of course, would want to mention a little reminder about our COVID-19 vaccine boosters. So if you haven't received your first or second vaccine booster, they are available. Everyone ages 12 years and older should get a booster when they are eligible, and some people may get a second booster dose. So who is eligible for the second booster dose? We actually have a terrific graphic that is available, again, on our website, so I would direct you to take a look at that. But very quickly, those who are eligible are people 50 years of age and older, regardless of their health status, people 12 years of age and older who are moderately or severely immunocompromised, and then people 18 years of age and older who received two doses of the Janssen vaccine. So I do want to mention, again, that these boosters are available. You can register a couple of different ways. Again, you can go to our website, vandeastmc.org. On the homepage, you can enter your information, or you can call the Van Deest Family Health Clinic phone number at 515-832-7800. Listen for the prompts, go through those, and then leave your contact information. And as we receive more vaccine, we will call to schedule those appointments. And along those same lines, I do want to give a quick reminder. Pat and I were talking before the program, as he had asked. We do still have universal masking in place at Van Deest Medical Center. We know that there are some other health systems that maybe have relaxed some of their masking policies with patients and visitors. At this time, we do still have universal masking throughout all of our facilities, as a reminder. And then lastly, I want to give a shout out to our friends at Iowa State University Extension. Mental health has been an emerging issue in the agriculture community. And Iowa State University, ISU Extension, and Outreach has responded to this need in several ways, from providing resources, trainings, and also delivering care packages. Some counties have also offered care packages in the fall or in the spring. And this year, ISU Extension and Outreach here in Hamilton County provided 20 care packages to area farmers the week of April 11th. And they were passed out among farmers that nominated each other. And this really forms a sense of community amongst farmers, and provides resources from state organizations and local businesses to help with mental health. Our hospital was very pleased to partner with the ISU Extension for these care packages. We were pleased to support the project and want to say thank you to our Hamilton County farmers.
They do a fine job.
They do an excellent
Absolutely.
Job. And with that, it does it for my announcements today.
Okay. So we have some very special guests here, as we've been advertising. We have Hamilton County Sheriff Doug Timmons joining us today. And also we have another fine friend from Anna.
Anna Anderson is our Anna quality Anderson. Director at Van Deest Medical
All right.
Center. You're correct.
I'll let you carry on with both of these fine folks.
Very good. Thank you, Pat. Yes, it is my pleasure to have both Anna and Doug with us today for this program. This is a great opportunity for education on opioid medications and proper diversion of those, disposal of those. And we're going to be talking about both of these topics. And Anna is going to give us a great rundown and education of opioid medications. And I think that's just a great place to start, Anna. Maybe if you would tell us about opioid medications and why opioid stewardship is so important to talk about.
Absolutely, and thanks very much for the opportunity to be here today. I work with our opioid stewardship committee at the hospital, and so one of the things that we really try to do at least once in a calendar year is to get out with the community and to provide some education on opioid use and appropriate opioid use. So we're really glad to have this opportunity to be with you today. In the medical center setting, opioids are a powerful class of naturally and synthetically derived medications for pain management, right? They've been in use at some point for centuries, originally derived from the poppy. We can now manufacture these in the lab. Examples include things like morphine, fentanyl, hydrocodone, oxycodone, brand names like Percocet, Vicodin, et cetera. And thing is with any powerful tool, using opioids responsibly, hence opioid stewardship, really means carefully weighing the risks and benefits of using these types of medications for pain. There are some pretty serious risks that come with the use of opioids. There's a high risk for tolerance. That means the body responds to opioids in such a way that you need more and more of the same substance to produce the same effect over time. There's a high risk for addiction. Again, over time, opioids produce physiological changes in the body that make it operate differently if the opioid's not present or is present in a lower amount. And those changes start to happen in about 5 days, which is, you know, kind of one of the most startling things about it. So some of the changes, there's a strong biological reward. Obviously, you get pain relief when you use opioids, but also there's feelings of euphoria and relaxation. Maybe it helps to encourage sleep. Some of the other things that are potentially problematic with opioids is there's eventually an upregulation in pain receptors in the body. So basically, that results in an increased perception of pain over time. Your body starts to get used to not feeling pain, and then it realizes, oh gosh, I need to know about pain to survive. So it builds more of those receptors. So ultimately, your feelings of pain might be increased over time. Over time, you could also develop withdrawal symptoms if you choose, you know, if you back off on your medications or choose not to use opioids. You might experience some anxiety or agitation, nausea and vomiting, sweating, tremors, pain. All kinds of things, you know, coming back from those medications. And it, unfortunately, the transition between legal and illegal sources over time is not uncommon. With opioids, along with the high risk of tolerance and addiction, there is a high risk of death. One really important risk of using opioids as a side effect is respiratory depression. So the opioids act on the sensory areas in the body and the brain that produce the body's natural desire to breathe. And at some point, we don't know exactly what that is for any one individual, your body just says, I'm not really interested in breathing anymore. And then you experience a respiratory arrest, and that's very problematic. And we need to use ventilators and things like that to help someone breathe. So that's a really hard thing to really consider when you're talking about a medication that's supposed to be designed to help you.
Exactly.
Right. So those risks are really something we have to weigh very strongly. The other thing is source control. As folks potentially make that transition from legal sources and being watched by your provider and very strongly monitored, you know, you might go and find something in someone's cupboard. And, you know, someone maybe had a surgery a few months ago and they've got some leftover pain medications. So they were prescribed for someone else in their situation. They may or may not be appropriate for you. There are sometimes diversion of legally manufactured opioids in the shipping chain, things that are used in veterinary medicine. Sometimes people opt to take those kind of things. You hear a lot in the news about carfentanil, which is actually an elephant tranquilizer that has been found in things that humans have ingested. And then, of course, you always have the illegally and illicitly manufactured opioids, specifically heroin and some of the analogs there. They're very close to their medical counterparts, but the problem is that if you don't receive it from a pharmacy and it's not prescribed by your doctor, there could be anything in there. And I think that's one of the scariest things about people, you know, using unmonitored medications that their provider isn't prescribing for them.
Right. And you don't know exactly what you're putting into your body.
Exactly. And sometimes it can be the first time that you choose to use something that's not prescribed by your doctor that is the thing that ultimately takes your life. And that's something that when we talk about the opioid epidemic and the opioid crisis that we're trying to prevent.
Right. And I think some of those points that you touched on at the very first part, when you were talking about the high risk of addiction, also just those withdrawal symptoms that people can experience, that could be, to me, that seems like some of the leading reason why people seek to get more opioids if they don't have enough because of what they're feeling and what their body is going through.
That's absolutely true. Those symptoms can last for a really long time, and they can be really debilitating. Mm-hmm. You know, even in someone that has used opioids in a prescribed and controlled fashion, as they start to back down mm-hmm. from those things, and those symptoms are scary. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, having that relationship with your provider is so important. So that, you know, as you start to look at other ways to manage pain, you have that support and you have that person there to give good advice and to watch and make sure that you're taken care of.
Exactly. Well, Anna, let's do talk about now what Vandy's Medical Center is doing as part of its opioid stewardship efforts. Anna, like I mentioned, is our quality director, and she actually, we have a committee, the Opioid Stewardship Committee at the hospital, and she leads this amongst many other things that she's doing. But that's where this program kind of developed, is that we thought this is a great opportunity for education and to let the public know what we're doing as a hospital. And again, just providing some general education for our listeners. So let's do talk about some of those specifics that we're initiating.
Absolutely. So as a healthcare organization, we have a really strong responsibility to understand and try to lessen the risks of using opioid medications for our patients, right? It's a powerful tool, but we have, you know, our first obligation is to do no harm. Opioid stewardship is about wise use, right? It's a very powerful tool. We've got our team dedicated, and it's a multidisciplinary team. That means there are providers involved. There are clinical pharmacists are involved. People like me in the quality area, our nursing area, our clinics. Every part of the organization, our surgery, our hospital side, our ED, you know, there's representatives on that committee from every part of the organization because we really feel strongly about making sure that we advise and use these medications responsibly. You know, the biggest thing that we want to prevent is opioid-related adverse drug events. So your over-sedation or even overdose in a person. There are certain conditions that if, you know, let's say your kidneys aren't working as well as they should, your body isn't clearing those things as well, you can become heavily sedated or even overdose without intending to. So we want to prevent those really life-threatening conditions. The other thing that we want to do is upstream prevention of abuse and addiction. So what is upstream prevention, right? A colleague of mine tells a story about two men that see, they're walking along the side of a river and they see someone drowning. And actually, then they start to see a lot of people floating down the river. And one man runs to the side of the river and he tries to help the people that are drowning. But his friend runs upstream. And the one guy that was helping the people is like, why aren't you helping me? You know, he's very upset. But what this guy has done is he's gone upstream and he's discovered that there's a bridge out. And people are falling in because the bridge is broken. And so upstream prevention is really going and looking for that bridge and finding where the root cause of that addiction and overdose. And what's been found over time is that root cause, that broken bridge, and the first contact with opioids is through a prescription for a lot of people, either for someone that's something that's prescribed for that individual or for someone in their household, and then they've opted to ingest those maybe at a time when they have some pain, right? What we do as an organization is we try to put our patients in contact with the best treatment for acute and chronic pain. You know, as we age and things don't work as well as we do, stuff starts to hurt, right? Or someone has surgery and, you know, you have a big disruption and it causes a lot of pain. So responsible prescribing for those right times to use that powerful tool. We want to make sure that the duration of your medication, the strength, the combination of opioid medications to manage your pain meet CDC best practice for safety standards. We use the Iowa Pharmacy Association Prescription Drug Monitoring Program to make sure that we're not supplying someone with opioid medications who is also getting them from another medical provider. So we want to make sure that we have a good idea of what someone's taking globally from all of their prescribers. And then we use quantitative testing where it's needed, meaning that we test for amounts of opioids in the system to make sure that we're doing things safely as we can. We're looking to also to make appropriate referrals. We have a wonderful pain service at VDMC. I think we've got some really caring providers and people who are really interested in helping you take a look at the root cause of your pain and making sure that we address that. We don't just put a Band-Aid on it by using those pain medications, you know, all the time. So we're looking at physical therapy referrals. Mm-hmm. Again, another great service. Can build strength and can build functionality back into your body so that that pain doesn't come visit you. Looking at, you know, palliative and hospice referrals, those kinds of things where, you know, maybe we have a life-ending condition that's happening and we want to make sure that pain is managed adequately. This certainly opioid stewardship is not taking pain control away from people who truly need it. And so what we do as an organization to kind of support these things is we look very intensely at ourselves from a lot of different directions. We look to make sure our providers are checking that prescription drug monitoring program every time with every patient they'd like to prescribe for. We look at high-dose prescriptions. We look at high-volume prescriptions. You know, are we prescribing a lot at once, or are we prescribing them for a really long time? We look at pain contracts. When someone uses opioids for a little bit longer period, we ask them to have an agreement with one of our providers to say, I'm going to get my medications here, and we're going to have a relationship and really have strong discussions and monitoring of what's going on with these powerful medications. We look at our Narcan use. So Narcan is the reversal drug for opioid medications. We look at the cases that we see in the ED. Are we seeing people come from the community that maybe are over-sedated or have a potential overdose? We look at it in our inpatient environments to see, is there an issue with how we're handling it? So we really look at ourselves strongly. And then what that leads to is monitoring for opioid-related events. And so far, in this year and I believe last year as well, we have zero opioid overdose events that are generated out of our facility. The other thing that we do is education, which makes me super happy to be with you all today. We want to support, obviously, our providers and staff with education, but also to build a partnership with the communities that we serve. We want you to make great decisions and have all the information at hand when you're considering use of an opioid medication, as well as for those you love. We like to share information about changes in how we're prescribing opioids and changes in just the culture around pain management, because we want you to know what to expect when you go in and are working with your provider to help manage your pain. And then also that partnership to prevent diversion. We don't want those medications going out into the world without there being monitoring involved. Keep your meds secured. Take advantage of the opportunities to clean out old medications, which is part of the reason we're here today with Sheriff Timmons. There's a great opportunity for diversion prevention coming up this weekend.
Perfect. Doug, how about you share a little bit about this coming weekend and what we do have planned?
Well, we're going to have our annual drug take back at Hy-Vee. We're going to go from 10 a.m. to noon. We're going to take any of your unwanted prescriptions, clean out your medicine cabinet, any of your pain medications that you've got over the years, or if you've had a loved one passed, they come and clean up. Some people bring multiple grocery sacks in and dispose of them. We can't, the only liquid we can take is cough syrup and make sure the lid is on. We can't take any sharps, any needles, any things like that. There is some information at the DEA website about how to dispose of needles. You can put them in a, say like a liquid laundry detergent bottle and put them all in there and then put them in the garbage. Just don't be throwing in the garbage. Just you happen, somebody happens to stick their hand in there. Last thing we need is a needle poke, and that's the last thing I want to get is a needle poke when somebody has a bag. So every time they pull up, we ask them what, if there's any liquids or any needles and objects like that. This is totally anonymous. You can drop it off. You don't have to take your name or your prescription on it. We just put it in a sack, and we put it in a big garbage sack, and we get it to the DEA, and they dispose of it correctly for us. We can also take vapes and cartridges from vapes, just remove the batteries from the vapes, and that's a upkick on things. We're seeing that a lot in our use around here. And Anna, you talk about Narcan. We've got grants from the Iowa Department of Public Health, so we carry Narcan. There's been several instances I know of fellow law enforcement officers who've done a traffic stop, and they've been digging through a purse or digging through a car, and all of a sudden they start feeling lightheaded and their heart rate is racing, and next thing they know, they're getting multiple doses of Narcan. But what's happened, and it's happening here locally. So that's, you know, the fentanyl. You know, yep. A lot of the drugs now are being mixed with fentanyl, carfentanil, which is even 1,000 times more deadly than fentanyl. It's just a speck, like a pinpoint of that drug that can, and they're mixing it with any type of drug. If they get a different high, and somebody, you'll talk to them when they've used this drug, and they said, well, it's a different type of high. It's like, what do you mean? You know, it just wasn't the typical high that I get when I use that stuff. and we've done this, you know, when we arrest people or somebody has an incident, and we're guessing, oh, they had fentanyl or carfentanil put in it. And those can be deadly. You know, you see, you know, if you pay attention to, like, the Des Moines area scanners on Facebook, they'll get calls of a 30-year-old female thinking it's possible opioid overdose, and she's conscious, and maybe she's breathing, maybe she's not breathing. And that's when the Narcan comes into effect. So this take-back event has been held since 2010. Every year it's kind of astonishing how many pounds of drugs we get because we have to report that to DEA. We'll have, you know, some years we have close to 100 pounds. And then we'll make sure it gets disposed of right. Don't flush it down your toilet. Everybody says it gets into our groundwater and causes problems that way. Get it to us. And if you can't make the take-back on Saturday, we have a drop-off lobby of the sheriff's office. In business hours, you can drop it off, and it just looks like an old mailbox. Put it in there, and again, make sure there's no needles or any liquids, and we can properly dispose those.
8 to 4:30 Monday through Fridays, folks.
Right.
Very good. Doug, did you have additional information that you wanted to share?
Just, you know, get in your medicine cabinets and clean them out and bring them on down to Hy-Vee. Hy-Vee's been great with us. We work with Kim Stokes there. Mm-hmm. She's been great to, you know, she even made mention that sometimes they will give Narcan when they give a prescription of an opioid just in case somebody accidentally takes. They can't remember if they took their dose, and they go take another one, then they have an episode, then they can use the Narcan, or somebody can administer the Narcan.
Very good. Well, I appreciate you sharing the information. And again, to our listeners, this is a great opportunity to properly dispose of those medications that are hanging around in your medicine cabinets, in your cupboards. A safe way to do it, as Doug mentioned, this Saturday, April 30th at Hy-Vee from 10 a.m. to noon. And also,
probably going to be inside because it's going to be raining.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want to get wet.
Well, that's because you just might melt. Yes. Right. But actually, he mentioned, too, that if you miss it this Saturday, there is an opportunity. There's a drop-off out at the courthouse there.
And
so.
City Hall and Stanhope, there's one, too.
Perfect.
Yes.
Also, okay. City Hall and Webster City, too, folks.
Yes. Police Department has one out in the lobby.
Okay. Very good. Doug and Anna, thank you so much. Anna,
thank
great information. She does a terrific job as our quality director. Very thorough. Such good information to be sharing, educating our public on the proper use of opioids and then the proper disposal as well. So thanks again for being here today and for all that you do for our community. Keep them safe.
That's the name of the game.
That's right.
All right. Lori, is that it?
That is it for today, Pat.
We'll look for another great show next week, and thanks for coming out today.
Yes, it was our pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. Lori Foster and our friends from Van Deese Medical Center with Focus on Health. Brought to you by Van Deese Medical Center. Now, more than ever, their focus is you.
For landscaping supplies, make one stop at Baumgart.